The information and opinions expressed on this podcast are intended to address specific questions asked, situations described in the program or on the website, and topics of expressed interest. The information and or opinions are not intended to be a substitute for a professional medical and or mental health diagnosis or treatment. You should not act or rely upon any information contained in these broadcasts or on the website without seeking the advice of a mental health and or medical professional who has conducted a formal assessment or evaluation on you and has the requisite information needed to provide a more well-informed opinion. This includes, but is not limited to, licensed mental health professionals, psychiatrists, and medical physicians and doctors. If you have any questions about the information or opinions expressed on the website or during this broadcast, please contact your licensed mental health and or medical professional.
Hello and welcome to Meditative Messages and Compelling Conversations. On this show, we will tackle topics, both controversial and obscure, that impact our daily lives, as well as our emotional health and wellness. We will explore how information from articles, commentaries, interviews, art, and media can influence your thoughts, behaviors, actions, and health. Meditative Messages and Compelling Conversations promises to spark discussions, evoke thoughts of introspection, and challenge your perceptions. But as always, the ultimate goal is to provide education, insight, and a pathway to resolution. And now here's your host, Dr. Donna Sewell.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Meditative Messages and Compelling Conversations, where open, honest, and intelligent discussions are the beginning of the resolution. Today, we have a very special call-in guest, Pastor Damon Richardson. He will be talking to us about the church, past, present, and future. We will be right back after this break. All right, welcome back, everyone, to Meditative Messages and Compelling Conversations with Dr. Donna Sewell and our very special call-in guest, Pastor Damon Richardson. How are you doing today, Pastor?
I'm doing wonderful. God bless you, and so good to be on with you today.
Thank you. Thank you. So we're going to jump right in. This was such an interesting topic to me. Just for the listeners, I'm going to have a two-part series, and Pastor Richardson, I think, is just the person to do it because he has a unique background. And I want him to kind of discuss his background so we can understand the context of his belief system. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you became a pastor?
Yes, I was born in Queens, New York, and was raised, born and raised in the Nation of Islam. And so when we were in the Nation of Islam, this was still during the era of Elijah Muhammad, who was still very much the leader, still in place. And it was the roughly a few years after Malcolm was assassinated. So this is the post Malcolm X Nation of Islam. And so this is, you know, formatively, that is my spiritual formation, my earliest experiences with anything religious, my theological formation and all of my ideological thinking was shaped in the context of the Nation of Islam. And so something happened, a number of dynamics occurred, not only within the Nation of Islam in terms of Elijah Muhammad passing away and his son moving the organization more towards mainstream Orthodox Islam, but of course some things, some dynamics happening in my family that kind of pulled my family apart. And so what that did is it really opened up, it created the, I would say it created the seedbed, if you will, for fertile, you know, just fertile opportunity for me to hear the gospel and to actually engage with people who were Christians, whereas previous to that, you know, we really didn't have a lot of exposure. You know, I didn't grow up in church. We weren't going to church on Sundays. Right. And so there's a man by the name of Mr. Brown that would come around into our community and pass out flyers and gospel tracts and different things like that. And so he really began to, that was the earliest contact that we had with anything that was Christian. So my thinking, anybody that wasn't a Muslim was a Christian. So
that's fair.
We saw if you celebrated Christmas, you were a Christian.
Okay.
So
okay.
It was as simple as that. But he really sowed the seeds early on with his persistence. He was like a children's evangelist, things like a Southern Baptist type church.
Mm-hmm.
And he would come around with a bus the very next day and gather, you know, all these young people and bring them to Sunday school or whatever.
Wow.
So he really broke ground in so many ways in terms of introducing us to the claims of Christianity. And so those seeds really came full harvest at 16 years old, debating back and forth with one of my sisters who had started attending church. And I was just being drawn in. So ultimately, after some debates and just, you know, continually in inquiring and questioning, I started attending just to kind of hear what was going on and just got pulled in. And just once I became a believer and became, once I was converted, I just really dove in learning and reading. About a year later, I was, you know, essentially 17 years old, started preaching, literally traveling and preaching, even while I was in high school. And I think I was always destined to be some sort of speaker. You know, I tell people I was born in Malcolm's house and then raised in Martin's house.
So I
think that was always in me. And but it was nurtured in the context of Christianity. And so I just dove in, literally reading and studying, and then obviously being in a position to where I now had to also defend my faith because of some of the ideological elements around me, such as not only the Nation of Islam, but the Five Percenters and some of the other ideologies.
For those who don't know, I'm familiar with the Five Percenters, but just really briefly, and then we're going to jump into our other questions. So, Rick, can you explain who and with the belief system of the Five Percenters?
Yeah, so they're you know, really quickly, they're a spinoff group of the Nation of Islam, and they really took some of the concepts and really kind of really broke it down at the street level, which is why hip hop just literally is just Five Percent ideology, which is really more of the idea that the black man and is God. You don't have to look for God. You are God.
Okay.
So they would say Allah means arm, leg, arm, head, which is essentially the five major parts of a human being. And, you know, and so then they use what they call supreme mathematics to just kind of interpret based on numbers spiritual and symbolic meaning by which they kind of, you know, philosophically interpret life.
Right.
And so, you know, the roots of that come from the Nation of Islam, but the leader of it, Clarence Muhammad, actually was an assistant to Malcolm in Temple Number 7 in Harlem and was expelled from the Nation for teaching some things that were contrary to their doctrine. And so he kind of borrowed that and spun his own kind of thinking with some similar overlay. And it just became popular in hip hop culture. And so you if you're talking about rappers from the 80s and early 90s, almost all of them were 5%ers. So when rappers are in a cipher, that comes from the 5% thing where they would stand in a circle. Cipher means zero. They would stand in a circle and then they would just recite what they would call today's mathematics. And so that's where a lot of that idea comes from, calling men, you know, God and God's body and peace to the gods. All of that comes from 5%. And it just really became ingrained in the culture of New York City and some of the other northern Philly and, you know, other places until it just became literally inseparable from hip hop and hip hop culture. And so I was around that. I grew up around that. And so, you know, I had to contend with those kind of things, New Wapians and all of these different groups. Some of that is here in the South. It's just not as prevalent or as prolific as you might find in northern cities.
So let me ask you that, and thank you for that information, because a lot of people don't, you know, they don't know the thought process of the 5%ers or the belief system. So I just wanted the listeners to hear that, because people hear it, but they don't really know what the actual belief system is. How does your background from the Nation of Islam and then moving into Christianity, how does that influence your teachings when you're teaching to your congregation? Because we're going to talk about that at the end of the show in terms of where they can come and find you or see you, all that good stuff. So how does that influence your teachings? And I notice you have something called, you consider yourself as an apologist, and the name of your church is Urban Logia, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what I would like for you to do is explain how the Nation of Islam, how your upbringing has basically influenced your Christian teachings, and kind of bring us into then how did you decide to become an apologist and what does that mean?
Gotcha. Yeah. So that's a really great question. So I was kind of, it's one of those things that chose me more so than me choosing it. And so I began to really practice apologetics before I knew what it was. And so there's a biblical verse in the New Testament, 1 Peter 3:15, that encourages Christians to be ready or prepared to give an answer to every person, a reason of the hope that is within them with gentleness and with respect. And so that word reason comes from the Greek word apologia. It means a ready defense. And so what that means is that Christians were encouraged, even from the earliest century of Christianity, to be prepared to know how to not only offensively present what they believe, but to be able to defend it even from some of the claims and some of the contentions around them. And so I kind of got cast into that, especially after coming from, you know, a Nation of Islam type background. But why are you a Christian? And so in that context, there, Christianity is highly suspect, you know, especially in oftentimes black communities where people think preachers are really trying to keep secrets from them and not tell them the truth. And, and Christianity is kind of the white man's religion, and the Bible
that's the big one
tampered with.
That's
and
the
all
big
of
one.
These kinds of claims that are out there, automatically, I had to start fielding these. You know, I'd get off the train, and next thing you know, I'm in the subway station having debates with some of these these different kind of groups who who are confronting me. And so it the Black Hebrew Israelite, so it became something that I was almost cast into. And then I started learning, oh, wow, there's actually areas of ministry that really focus on equipping Christians to be able to intelligently speak to their faith, not only from Scripture, but also from history, and, you know, to be able to explain the the rationale and the, you know, and the intelligence, the reasoning behind, you know, the Christian faith,
right?
And at least give people some intelligent basis for why we believe it, not just I just believe.
Because my grandmother believed.
Right.
Yeah, I believe because my grandmama told me that was the way it was supposed to go. That kind of thing. I think that is excellent because I think that's missing a lot. I think with the advent of the internet, which is good and bad, but I think with that, individuals are looking for a more logical sense of why should I move to, it doesn't matter what religion or denomination, they're like, why should I move in this particular direction? So I think that is excellent, and I think that'll be a good draw for the church, because one of the and not for everyone. Everybody wants something different. And, you know, I've said this to you when I was on the phone with you. Church is like McDonald's now. I mean, Burger King, if you want it, we got it. You can find a church that's going to give you what you would like. However, one of the biggest, I don't want to use the term complaints, but concerns and challenges that the church has had in recent years, from my opinion, is that everything seems to be emoted. It seems to be based up on feelings and emotions. And for those who are relatively logical, it's hard for them to kind of vacillate between those two things. So I think that is excellent. We are talking to Pastor Damon Richardson. We will be going on a commercial break, and we will be right back. And we're going to pick up with Pastor Damon Richardson talking about the church, past, present, and future. Welcome back to Meditative Messages and Compelling Conversations. Thank you for my Clark sisters, Mr. Deshaun. Much appreciated.
No problem, I guess.
Much appreciated. I did that for Pastor Damon on the phone right here because he and I talked about it.
I love that. Stevie Wonder, Master Blaster Influence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So before we went on break, and we just have about maybe like 9 minutes left in this segment, and again, for the listening audience, please keep in mind this is going to be a part one and a part two. Okay, so before we went on break, you were talking about the term apologist, and you were talking about how there's information out there basically talking about the Christian faith kind of from a logical perspective and the belief system from a logical perspective. So my question to you is this. Do you feel like the church has changed within the last 10 to 20 years? Is the message different?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my goodness. You know, where to start with that is it's almost like a junky room. Where do you start? Unpacking. Where do you start?
Okay.
and so over the last 10 to 20 years, especially 20 years, the church has changed significantly, some for the good, some for the bad.
Mm-hmm.
One area of change And I know this as a researcher, not only looking at Barna studies and Gallup studies, but Rainer studies and a number of other scientific basis for research. Is that there has been a really sharp decline in church membership over the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. And that decline, it's known where that decline is. It's really among millennials. And so it's about a 20%.
So give us the age group on millennials, because every time I read an article, they're telling me something a little different by a few years. So tell me how we're defining millennials in terms of age.
I'm sorry.
Can you tell me how you're how are we defining millennials in terms of age? I know you said the sharpest decline is among millennials. What's the age group of millennials?
Yeah, so I think generally held, the age group for millennials is somewhere between 22 and around 35, maybe
okay.
even 38.
Okay.
And that's kind of the generally held age range, roughly around 22 to about 38.
Okay.
Right. And so this is the generation after, actually, my generation, some may refer to as Generation X.
Okay.
And so, so Generation X is, I think, roughly from about 65, 1965 all the way up until, I'd say, about 1980, 79 or 80.
Okay.
And so the millennials follow.
Mm-hmm.
They follow, they're somewhere after that generation.
Why has there been a decline? I know you said the research is showing that the biggest decline, or the decline really started with this particular generation. So what is the research showing in terms of the reasons?
I think what social scientists have shown us is what the data says. But what I think experts in ministry are saying, mm-hmm. in order to be able to really make sense and correlate, because mm-hmm. the data doesn't give you any reasons. The data just tells you, here's what it is.
Okay.
But ministry experts attempting to correlate have suggested that part of the reason that there's such a sharp decline in millennial membership, millennials even identifying as Christians, and some of them just more so identifying as just religious, not necessarily Christian, and not really having historic church membership.
Mm-hmm.
One of those correlations is that there is a sharp increase in what's called postmodern thinking.
Okay.
And so right around that very same time as the millennial generation is emerging, many of your college campuses and universities were, overrun with postmodern thought. And that is the idea that truth is not really as absolute. So we were coming out of an era of scientific modernity, mm-hmm. modernism, and that is that empirical science proves things to be right or wrong.
Right.
And so postmodernism says there is no real absolute truth. Everything is really relative. It's your truth versus my truth. You can hear people say now, you can have a conversation, it's a speak your truth.
Right.
And what they're saying is that as long as it's true for you, it's true. Doesn't matter whether it really correlates to any kind of reality. It's
mm-hmm.
your truth.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so I think that's probably the best correlation that's ever been made in terms of explaining that decrease in church membership. Because one of the things that is fundamental and core to Christianity is absolute, essential doctrine. There are certain things that are just non-negotiables about what makes Christian faith or Christianity mm-hmm. Christianity. Mm-hmm. And so in postmodern kind of thinking, those things are questionable. They can't be absolutely true. You can speak of truth, but not in absolute terms. And so that almost defines the way that millennials think today.
Okay.
And which also may explain why millennials are less likely to hold jobs in the very same for the very same length of time. You don't find that tenure like you would in my generation or generations before. You got some folks, some boomers, who were just retiring, been
absolutely
on the job for 45
absolutely
years.
Or they retired from one job and got a retirement check and continued to work on another job so they could continue
exactly
to pull. Absolutely,
millennials are mostly characterized by being non-committal. Oh, so it's not just a phenomenon in church.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a generational characteristic. They mostly don't identify with either political party. They're you know, often freelancers in terms of their work. And this is not necessarily true for everybody. It's just kind of more of a generational
mm-hmm.
type characteristic. And so I think that when you look at it in the church, that's one of the ways that church has changed. Now, the church is still full of millennials now. It still has a lot of millennials.
Mm-hmm.
They have not totally abandoned church, but what they have done is they have also changed church in many ways. Like, church is also often very informal in terms of the way that they go. Like, I don't even wear suits anymore.
So what I want to do, I'm gonna stop you right here, because that's a whole nother conversation, and we're gonna get into that the second part. We're gonna end the first segment, and then also, just so my engineer knows, I'm probably gonna put him on the spot on the next segment, because he is a millennial. He's 25. I talk about him all of the time, so I'm probably going to put him on the spot with one or two questions. But we have been listening to Pastor Damon Richardson basically talking to us about the church and giving us a lot of history about the church, and we're going to talk about the past, present, and future, and we're kind of rolling all of that into one. You've been listening to Meditative Messages and Compelling Conversations with Dr. Donna Sewell, and again, our very special call-in guest, Pastor Damon Richardson. As always, I hope you guys have a fantastic day and a happy and healthy week, and I will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Meditative Messages and Compelling Conversations with Dr. Donna Sewell. All shows are posted on www.meenterprises.net. That's www.meenterprises.net. Until next time, we ask that you stay encouraged, strive for enlightenment, and enrich your mind, body, and spirit.